This week on Two Legs, you love it, you hate it. It's the gift that keeps on giving. It is Wonderful Christmas Time. Our thoughts on that song that just people love to hate. And also we'll be showing off this little guy right here. And stay tuned.
Spirits up, we're here tonight, and that's enough.
Hi, McCartney fans, and welcome to another edition of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with Paul's solo career. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and as always, I am joined by my partner in crime, the one and only Andy Nichols. Andy, my friend, what is going on?
Good evening. Fine, sir. How are you tonight?
Doing wonderful. We're going to do kind of like a Christmas, but not really our Christmas episode, but we're going to try to get in the spirit and channel, a particular song that, for some reason people just love to pick on. And, but we'll get to more of that soon. But first, let's just talk a few minutes about the latest news. Really not much going on except for Paul has added more dates to his European tour.
Yeah.
So just head over to paulmccartney.com and, check all that great information out. Hopefully you'll be one of the lucky ones to see him next year, which I think it's all the dates are in June as of right now, I believe.
All in June for right now, yeah.
Yeah. So, and if you're lucky, Andy, maybe he'll do a couple East Coast states because he didn't last year. It was all more Midwest and West Coast states.
Yeah, it's the last time I saw him was September of 2017, so it's been a while.
Okay, all right. So if he comes back your way, you'll go, or are you going to skip out?
No, without question, I'll be there.
Okay, great. Anyways, so there's that. This past weekend, not this past week, not only was it Thanksgiving, and I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving. How was yours, Andy?
Very nice. Spent it with family, just relaxing. How about yours?
Oh, it was great. Yeah. Another great day of relaxing. We binge watched a show on Epic, I believe it is. It's called, The Godfather of Harlem, starring, Lawrence Fishburne, I think is his name, isn't it? Forest Whitaker.
Whitaker. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good. Pretty good show. I'm enjoying that. And, I had some wine, and it was a great
Ditto, my friend. Just relaxed. And then yesterday got hunkered in with a snowstorm here in the Northeast. Yeah.
Well, speaking of storm, Thursday was Thanksgiving. Friday was Record Store Day, which is something my wife and I, we just absolutely love doing. What we normally do is we have a location that we go to. There's a chain of record stores out here called Zia Records. Not only is it just a record store, but they do CDs and DVD, Blu-rays and books and all that stuff. And, so we went to the one location where it doesn't get as much traffic as the other Zias, so we usually get there about between 2 and 3 in the morning. We like being first in line, because
hardcore,
a lot of
hardcore.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of the stuff where we get from time to time are the ones that are, limited to under 1,000 copies. So we really feel it's worth it to get first in line. Even though this was, 12,000 copies, I knew there was going to be, no problem getting this one, which it wasn't. I could see it through the window as I was, waiting anxiously.
Did they have a lot of them or no in the store you were at?
Yeah, I would say they probably had a good 10.
Oh, okay.
A good 10 copies. So, obviously I was able to get one for you. So as they say, the check is in the mail.
Thank you, my friend. Yep.
Got it. problem. No problem. I also picked up my buddy Willie Nelson here. It's a track called "Even I Can Get Too High" for the A side, and the B side is a really cool song called "It's All Going to Pot," which he did with his buddy Merrill Haggard. I think they've done three albums together over the last 30, 40 years. So that's a pretty good track too. And I picked the one that that I wanted that was more on the rare side. I think they only did 1,200 of these. So it's an album called Fight. And if you're familiar with Judas Priest, you'll know the singer Rob Halford. And this was his band, the debut album of this band that he did in between his tenures of you know, being the lead singer of Judas
Priest. I was going to wonder if it was before Judas Priest or after Judas Priest.
Oh, yeah. There was like a 10-year stretch where he wasn't the lead singer of Judas Priest, so he, you know, had a couple different bands at that time. So, and that was one of the albums that he put out during that time. Pretty heavy. You know, if you're a fan of good hard, you know, excuse me, hard rock, heavy metal, it's a pretty good. His vocals are strong as always, and you know, are you a Priest fan at all?
Not really.
Okay.
Respect, all right. Much respect, but you know, not my cup of tea. But it sounds like he did a really good, nice score on Record Store Day.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, I'm thankful that this wasn't a big, you know, there wasn't too many that I wanted.
Right.
You know,
because it varies from year to year. Sometimes there's great releases and sometimes there's so releases. I just personally, you know, after eating food all day long on Thursday, could not bring myself to just wake up and go to my local record store back in my hometown near Red Bank, New Jersey. And they had it too. And I probably could have called a favor in and said, keep that one to the side, and they probably would have, but you agree graciously, were able to pick up a copy, and I do appreciate it.
Right, and that's the good thing about, you know, going with, you know, a friend or your wife or girlfriend or whatever, because, you know, you are pretty much only allowed to get one copy
Although
per person.
I did read some stores, and I follow a few on Instagram and stuff, they were like, no quantity, you know, mattered. You could get, you know, if you wanted to buy five, you could have bought five. There was no limits.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so we got there at our place at about, you know, 2:45. It's in the 60s. It's great. We're going, oh, this is going to be a wonderful night. No big deal. Well, an hour later, about 4:00 in the morning, it just starts pouring. It's like, it's almost like a tsunami. It was nonstop. The rain came for a good 5 hours straight. And, no damage by where we were, but then when we head back home to North Phoenix, there was trees uprooted. I mean, cars were destroyed because of trees, and it was pretty intense storm. You know,
sounds like it. So that was that remnants of that storm that was hitting the Midwest, and then working its, or is that something? I guess I don't know.
I knew we were getting rain, but I didn't know of any Midwest storm. I didn't. Well, you know,
most importantly, did the records get damaged? No.
No. Absolutely not, my friend. Absolutely
not.
Thank God. Yes, exactly. So, but anyways, so this song that we're going to talk about, unless there was anything else you wanted to bring up.
We can dive right into Mr. Wonderful Christmas Time, you know.
Yeah. There it is.
There it is. Originally, Columbia Records, 1979. Yeah.
Yeah.
November. 40 years.
November, yeah, exactly. So this is the 40th anniversary of that particular song. Definitely tell it was recorded during the McCartney 2 sessions.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. This was probably, this was his first solo single since Another Day.
Yeah, it's credited to himself, but Wings, you know, did play it, but it was...
No, Paul and Linda McCartney, like on Uncle Albert, Admiral Halsey.
Right.
It's just strictly Paul McCartney, which was the first time since, you know,
Another Day, sure.
What else? I mean,
you know, this, shocker to, I'm sure it's not a shocker to anybody, but I mean, you know, people either love it or hate it. I love it. Wonderful Christmas Time to me has all the trademarks of a classic McCartney song, has the classic trademarks of a Christmas song, has the bells in the beginning of it. You know, the second you hear that song with the dun dun dun, I'm in. I'm done. You got me. Hook, line, and sinker. I'm good. I think where people give it a lot of flack is when they, again, this goes back to that age-old freaking debate, Lennon versus McCartney. They compare this to Happy Christmas War is Over, and they're like, oh, it's nothing compared to that. That's not the argument. They're two different songs, and they're both awesome in their own right.
Right.
That's been my feeling.
Yeah, I mean, two different points of views on these songs. I mean, you know, War is Over, I mean, definitely had a different agenda. I mean, it was just not about, you know, Christmas. It had its own whole other thing. Wonderful Christmas Time, I mean, this is basically your basic Christmas.
3 minute, feel good, no nonsense. You know, happy Christmas, have a glass of wine, enjoy your friends, enjoy your family, and go home, you know. And that's all he's saying in this song. And people that kind of get hung up about it, it really just cracks me up. Because what are they, you know, they're looking for more meaning in the song and just not listening to the song for what it is.
Right. You know? Why do you think this song gets so much flack? I mean, what is it about this song?
Well, listen, some people just don't like, you know, certain songs because they just don't like the song. And that could be very well true. They may just not like it. I mean, you know, there's plenty of Christmas songs that kind of grate under my skin. I mean, It could be a case of that, you know, like Mariah Carey's, you know, if I don't hear that song ever again, it'll be too soon. Thanks a lot.
Right.
I'm good.
Last Christmas is another one that kind of,
it's over and over and over again. And maybe Wonderful Christmas Time has reached that point to somebody who are not like you or I. They're like, I can't listen to that song again. It's just incessant, you know, and that very well might be for some people, but I do think there's a certain percentage of people that do treat it just a bit unfairly because of the comparison factor, you know, and they don't just take it for what it is.
Right.
You know, I could listen to it in the summer or in the fall, or I could listen to it any time of the year. I could. I really could.
It is a very catchy song, no doubt about it. Do I love it every time I hear it? No. It's fun. Christmas almost doesn't start until you hear this song. You know, I know there's already radio stations that are playing Christmas songs, you know, 24 hours now. And, you know, the funny thing is, it's really, you got to put your brain around this. I mean, it's really just impossible to believe. But this song earns Paul an estimated $400,000 to $600,000 a year,
right?
For one month of the year,
it earns them that much money because it's streamed everywhere and everybody, it generates so much airplay for 1 month of radio play. Now there's a station out here in the New York area called 106.7 Light FM, and I think starting on November 15th at like 5 o'clock, they went wall to wall Christmas. November 15th, that's like 5-6 weeks from Christmas, and they went wall to wall Christmas music. So yeah, I'd love to see
imagine that song had to have been played at least 100 times
easy,
you know, in that 1 month
easy,
you know. So, but you know, besides the, I mean, the for me, the, I mean, the melody is very catchy, like most you know, McCartney songs are. And then the chorus, you know, simply having a wonderful Christmas time is perfect. You know, the lyrics, the verses from time to time can be a little silly, you know, or hokey, or however you want to say it. You know, sometimes Paul McCartney can do that with a song, and these, you know, songs the lyrics can be a little silly. But it doesn't mean it's a bad song. Now, you just don't always have to, you know, take the lyrics. It's just not the lyrics that makes a song a good song.
No.
I mean, if it's catchy, you know, the melody is great, then, I mean, it still makes it a good song. I mean, I know there's people out there that can't stand it, but they'll sing it, and, you know, they think it's a, you know, a catchy song. Well, if you sing it, and if it's a catchy song, then I think you like the song.
I think it qualifies as a song that you like, you know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but it's pretty interesting to think about it now in terms of legacy, you know, 40 years later on, and other people have covered it. He did a collaboration with Jimmy Fallon, and over the last 10 years, he's reintroduced it to his live set. And I was fortunate enough to see him do that in Liverpool at the Echo Arena in 2011. And he actually brought out a children's choir, like, to sing that part of the song, you know, a choir of children sing their song, which was nice touch that he's added to it. I think he even played it on SNL a couple of years ago too.
Yeah, I think so.
He played it on when he was a guest on for SNL, and he played it on that as well. So it's kind of over the last decade or so, it's had a little bit of a rebirth and revival in Paul McCartney's own kind of concept. You know, because he hadn't played it live since 79, since that tour of the UK when the song was brand new and Wings was playing it, and then you know it didn't get touched again until 2008 or 2009. So you know, it certainly laid dormant for quite a while.
Right, and it's funny how sometimes he'll reevaluate a song, you know, or an album that didn't get much respect when it was first released, and he'll dust it off, and then he'll reevaluate it, and he'll come to terms and say, yeah, it's a good song, and this is can't put this in a good song category.
I think one of the things that I like about Paul, I should say love about Paul, is his willingness to try and be experimental, right? So he wrote this song in the middle of July, and when he was just locked up there in his farm, just messing around with synths, and he's like, I'm going to just try to make a Christmas song, and he just got some funky synths, you know, got a catchy melody, threw it together, you know, and in November released it as a Christmas single, and it did very well. So that's one of the things too I like about it, because it's like he's not trying. He's like, I'm going to just try this and, you know, see how this works, because he was in the throes of McCartney too, right? Doing all those experimental songs and doing everything with McCartney too, and then in the middle of all that threw this together and said, oh, let me try a Christmas song, you know. Not even thinking about it, but it turned into one, and it's as you pointed out, it's earns him one, you know, some, you know, 1 month out of the year, it earns him, you know, a crazy amount of money just for something that came out of a very organic and natural process, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which I always admire.
You mentioned Wings. They did do it during that 79 tour, and they were also in the promotional video that came out that same year, which is kind of odd, you know, because it wasn't, you know, labeled a Wings song, but here they are in the video. I know the video was filmed at Fountain Inn, which is in West Essex, I believe, and then part of the video, and then the other part was filmed at the Hippodrome Theater in Eastbourne, which is where they rehearsed for that tour.
Right.
You know, which was pretty cool. You got some really cheesy special effects in that video, but
yeah,
you know,
graphics.
That was,
yeah, 19
cheesy 19, effects,
right?
Know?
In 1979, and just, you know, taking it back, just in back then, I mean, you know, videos were such a big deal then, right? Just, you know, to see a video accompany something, you know, it was like, okay, you know, we take it for granted now, but you know, okay, single comes out, oh, both, you know, 1979, 80, MTV really hasn't launched yet. Until 81. So, you know, a promotional video to accompany, you know, a Christmas single is a big deal. You know, I've always wondered what, and I could never really find anything in my research, what Lennon thought about Wonderful Christmas Time. I don't think he ever commented on it. I'd be curious to see what he thought about it, you know, because he did like that kind of quirky sound that Paul got with Coming Up. So, and this kind of has that same kind of trademark. I'm curious if he ever heard it and what his thoughts were on it, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure it was like, oh, bloody hell, another one.
Right. Oh, he went to go ahead and wrote another classic, right?
You know, yeah, exactly. Typical. Another timeless classic that's going to earn him millions and millions of dollars throughout his career.
I was going to say, one of the coolest things about it for me in collecting the CDs, right? Because as a younger kid, I didn't have a turntable right away or vinyl. The advent of the CD, you know, in the 1990s when the CD was king, of course, the initial EMI presses of McCartney's music all included bonus tracks, right? So
The McCartney Collection, I believe that was what it was called.
Before that was 93. The McCartney Collection was a series of albums that was produced and just came out in Europe and were released as imports in this country. I'm talking about the original 1987, 88, 89 presses of Paul's CDs, which all included bonus tracks on them. The McCartney Collection kind of mirrored the same track listing as the original EMI releases, but they changed them a little bit. But Wonderful Christmas Time and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reggae were included as bonus tracks on Back to the Egg. So what happened to me for me was, and I don't know if you can relate, is like that whole Back to the Egg album to me kind of took on a very Christmassy feel because those two songs were on there. So, around this time of the year, I kind of always kind of get myself into a back to the egg mode, only because those songs are on there. So, and then the kind of music kind of it complements. You know, you've got like Winter Rose, Love Awake, songs that kind of evoke kind of a Christmassy type feel. You know,
right?
That's just my take on it. So I kind of associate Back to the Egg with a Christmassy type of feel anyway. I know it doesn't really tie into it at all in its history, but for me it does because the time period, 79, so they just took those singles, put them on the album and matched them together. But that's just my personal take, associating that album with that single.
Gotcha. A little different for me. I mean, I don't think he recorded this to be taken seriously as, you know, something that, you know, like a Maybe I'm Amazed or anything like that. I think it was more made just for like a kid's Christmas song in the same tradition as Mary Had a Little Lamb. You know, it's just a fun, you know, kidsy style, you know, Christmas song. And that's what I get out of it. I mean, I enjoyed the song when I was a kid, when I was first hearing it for the first time, and enjoyed it then. I mean, that meant, you know, Christmas is coming. I'm going to get presents.
It's you hear that song and you know, you're like, okay. You know, you're a kid, or even me as an adult. It still gets you excited. You know, it kind of hits all those feels. You know, it just does.
Yeah, I don't think it's the worst Christmas song out there. Like, I mean, while I was making notes for this episode, I was, you know, Googling Wonderful Christmas Time, and there's people out there that have it on their worst Christmas song list out there, and even people are considering it the worst song of all time.
God help those people.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know. And their final statement is if you like this song, you're wrong.
You know what? They're wrong. How about that?
Yeah. I don't mind that at all. But you brought up Back to the Egg. Funny that, you know, in the UK, the song charted it as number 6, and it did better than any of the singles that came from Back to the Egg, you know, so.
Right. And Back to the Egg, Back to the Egg came out in June, right? Or May.
Earlier that year, 79, yeah.
Yeah, so like obviously Back to the Egg's already out. Wonderful Christmas Time comes out a few months later, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you wonder if at the time he would have thought about putting a Christmas song on an album, but he was probably like, nah, we're just going to keep it traditional. But I think it works on an album. I mean, I've been so programmed to hearing that on an album, you know, that it's right. I've gotten used to it, you know? So you wonder, you know, but artists, you know, marrying up, you know, a traditional Christmas standalone single versus a traditional album, which historically we know he's always kind of done that. He's always kept the big hit single. I mean, look at Back to the Egg with Good Night Tonight. He could have put that and Daytime Nighttime Suffering on it and Wonderful Christmas Time. And now you're talking like a whole different ball game.
Oh yeah. I mean, Columbia wanted him to put, you know, Good Night Tonight on the album, and he refused because of that same theory that they had during the Beatles. I mean, a single is a single. You don't put singles on an album.
No.
And, so he did do that from time to time throughout the 70s, but the bulk of his singles were songs that were not on albums.
Standalone, Live and Let Die, Mull of Kintyre,
singles from 72, Another Day, Junior's Farm, you know, Good Night Tonight. Yeah, so there was a lot of singles, Hell on Wheels, throughout the 70s that were
just standalone singles. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the collaboration that he did with Jimmy Fallon? You have, I think, copies of those, right?
Yeah, so 2 years ago for the second Record Store Day, 2017, here are the releases. So obviously red vinyl, green vinyl. Haven't opened them yet. I'll probably just keep them sealed. And, I had saw that episode where, you know, it's everybody's in like, it seems like everybody's in like a small box. Everybody's crowded in, you know, and I think, or actually, no, this was more like a, I think it was almost like a, where it was like the Brady Bunch style.
Oh, yeah, they did like the boxes. Yeah, that was part of the SNL, I think. Or maybe I'm confusing the two. I thought it was the same thing.
Yeah, I think it was more for the Jimmy Fallon. I could be wrong.
It was just Jimmy Fallon's show. He did a special video just for Jimmy Fallon. Right. You're right.
Right. Yes. So, and that was a lot of fun. And, he still sings it well. I mean, it's not a vocally challenging song, so I don't see, you know, him having any issues singing the song if he brings it back, you know, live, you know, especially during a November or December show.
Yeah, he's kept it in the original key. I mean, and there's some wonderful clips on YouTube of him playing this over the last 10 years, you know, there's a performance, I think, well, obviously the performance that I saw in Liverpool. There's a performance from, I think, Cologne in 2009, which is wonderful. There's that word again. That's the word of the show. Wonderful, right?
Yes.
But it's no, he's done a nice job with it since giving its kind of rebirth over the last 10 years. But you just going back to your point about releases, I also have another little gem here that I picked up, you know, once upon a time, a long ago, in a record store. This is a 1993 red vinyl of Wonderful Christmas Time, which you can see right. Yeah. On the Purple Capital label with Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reggae. This was a series of 45s. A lot of Paul's, a lot of the Beatles all got kind of a run of vinyl 45 pressings again, some of them with colored vinyl. And I just happened to grab this in a New York City record shop, oh, probably when I was about 16 or 17, for about $3.
Okay.
Before I actually found the real one. But yeah, it's nice. It's nice. It's nice always, you know, kind of going with the red vinyl, keeping it uniform. But like I said, right, you mentioned that you were still looking for this, but you could find this anywhere for probably less than less than $5. So.
Yeah, exactly. And then you talked about how it was on part of the original CD pressings of, you know, in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know that Paul McCartney collection from the 90s, you could find it on McCartney 2. I think it's on the McCartney 2 along with Red Nose Rudolph the Red Nose Reggae.
Let's take a little look here. Let's see. Let's see. We've got the original 89 Back to the Egg.
Yeah, and right. I think they put Good Night Tonight and Daytime, Nighttime Suffering on that. Didn't they, for bonus tracks?
No, just on this one they put Daytime, Nighttime Suffering. They did not put Good Night Tonight on this. They did not.
Okay.
And I think it was on Wonderful Christmas Time and Good Night Tonight. I don't think it's on anything other than that. Just looking at it real quick. No, so it wasn't. Yeah, it was on. Well, the 93 one. Let's just check 1993 here while we're while we have our back to the camera here. Okay, so here's the 1993 Paul McCartney Collection Edition, and this is the same track listing as the 1989 EMI. 17 tracks. Daytime, Nighttime Suffering, Wonderful Christmas Time, and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reggae. Yeah. Oh, you know what they did do? I think they put Good Night Tonight on the 19... Yeah, that's what they did. Ah.
McCartney 2, the
Paul McCartney collection, Good Night Tonight is the last track on this. So they kind of did a little bit of a hodgepodge, merging eras there. I remember when I got this, I was like, why the heck are they putting Goodnight Tonight on this when it clearly so belongs on this, you know?
Exactly. Right. Very true. Very true. Now, it is Wonderful Tonight. There is two versions on the I think this was, 2011 when this set came out?
Right. So, oh, right. There was the standard one, and then there's like a longer studio cut.
5 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a pretty cool one. If you haven't checked that out, check that out on the archive of McCartney 2. I think it's about 5 minutes. The standard cut of the song, just taking a look at the 45 here, is 3:48. So, like I said, the archive collection of McCartney 2 has it at least over 5 minutes. And all that really is just extra synth stuff, which for a synth proggy guy like myself, I dig all that. So.
Now, you know what's not on this set is the B-side.
Right. Right.
Oddly enough.
Right.
Is, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reggae, which is as far from reggae as you can be. You know, there is some nice rock violin played by Bob Loveday is his name. And, you know, for my research, this song was recorded in 1975.
I was just going to ask you that. I had to look it back up, but my ears tell me that was recorded during the Venus and Mars era.
Right.
When they were in New Orleans doing My Carnival and all that stuff. Is that what you saw?
No, more or less just recorded in 1975.
Oh, okay. So, I'll have to double check that.
It doesn't really say where or when exactly. You know, I would love to have more information. And I was hoping we would get that information on here or the Venus and Mars, and it's not on the Venus and Mars set.
Do you have a copy of Eight Arms to Hold You handy at the moment?
No.
Do you have a copy of this book, Chip Mattinger and Mark Easter's book?
No, I should get one.
Oh, this is this is like the Bible, man. I've had this for almost 20 years. This is everything. They reprinted it. I think you can get it electronically now too as a PDF.
I've heard that. Yeah.
And if, for like $20, it's worth it. All right, let's take a look at 19.
Yeah, do that.
Let's take a look at 75 here, because I'm almost positive it goes back to then. And we can chop all this out as soon as I find it. 76. 75 tour.
Let's go to the index in the back and
see. I got it. No, there is no index. There is no index in this. Okay. That's the only thing.
Okay.
All right, so we've located a copy of my trusty Bible, Eight Arms to Hold You, by Chip Mattinger and Mark Easter, a book that I've had and clutched to for nearly 20 years. And sure enough, as Tom researched, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reggae does go back to 1975 and the Venus and Mars sessions. So here we have it does go back to, but it was not recorded in New Orleans, okay, according to Mattinger. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reggae was recorded in 1975 at Abbey Road. Paul was just recording some crazy music for some far-out film fellow was doing. When he got to chatting with the delivery man for the music rental company he was utilizing, when Paul discovered that the driver could play fiddle, Paul instructed him to pick up his instrument and return to the session. Once Paul had finished the work on the other track, the duo taped a reggae-styled instrumental version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. As the story goes, the Phantom Fiddler then escaped without having his name properly documented for posterity. In the end, the track went unused until Paul needed a B-side for his 1979 Wonderful Christmas Time 45, and this fit the bill perfectly. Plus, the identity of the mystery man made for good publicity. He has been since identified it as Bob Loveday. The track is only available in mono. While there's a U.S. Columbia reissue from 84 that says stereo, it's not so. An acetate of Rudolph was sold by Christie's as part of the Trevor Jones collection, which probably dated from the 1979 production. So there's the Rudolph history.
Very cool. I'll have to get a copy of that book.
Yeah, like I said, I'm pretty sure you can get it as a PDF on their site. I'll send you the link. But it stops in 2000, which is outdated by now. But it's a wonderful area of research for information for the stuff like that. So
amazing.
Thank you, Mark and Chip, as always.
Yeah, as always. But I mean, what are your thoughts on the song? I mean, it's just instrumental, not really much going on. I mean, the violin is the highlight of that song. I mean, I hate the word throwaway, but for me, it's nothing really special.
No, not compared to what Wonderful Christmas Time is. I mean, it's nice. Got a little harpsichord intro there, ding ding, which is okay. And like I said, you mentioned the fiddle playing on it is obviously what is the whole track is. But if there ever was filler in a McCartney song, I think this pretty much fits the bill. And as they said in the book, he didn't need a B-side, and he already had it in the can 4 years already at that point. So all right, let's just throw that on there, and there you go.
Yeah,
but exactly. It's curious that he did not put that on the archive issue of McCartney 2. Well, maybe
exactly. I mean, he thinks that little of the song where he he's not going to include it, and then because McCartney 2, the time where it came out in 79, so you would think it would have been on the McCartney 2 archive,
right?
And then since it was recorded in 75, then you also think maybe it would
go on
Venus
and Mars. Right.
Not to be.
Well, perhaps he's probably saving it for that deluxe archived issue of Back to the Egg, which it probably, if it's going to appear anywhere, I'm sure it'll be on that with Daytime, Nighttime Suffering and all that. Yeah, one would think.
You would hope so. But let me ask you this. We know Ringo did an all Christmas album. Would you like to have seen Paul do an all Christmas album?
Yes, I would have.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Back then, though, not now in his, like, crooner voice like he did with Kisses on the Bottom and Rod Stewart is done. I would have liked to have seen him do one back then, but it wasn't trendy then. Well, it wasn't trendy for artists of his caliber to do it. That was more, Andy Williams and Frank Sinatra and all those artists to do it. I would have loved, I still would think it'd be cool if he did one, but I think the time has passed for that. If he was going to do one, it should have been back then, or maybe in the 80s or something, when it was a little bit different. But I would have liked one. What about you?
Yeah, if he was to do one, I was just listening to his version of the Christmas song, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, and I still think he was in fine voice then. You know, maybe that would have been the time to do one, since he already had that band. I mean, which was is remarkable. All the instrumentation on that Kisses on the Bottom LP, you know, is remarkable.
That would have been. I think he could have tapped into something, because then didn't he do like that Christmas Kisses thing too? He could have. Right. He could have kind of siphoned off of that thing and done, his own little Christmas thing. You're right about that.
So, and then, you know, now going into that, you know, that Christmas song, you know, he did change one lyric, you know, in there, and I don't know if you're aware of that.
No.
So I guess the lyric was, you know, turkey and some mistletoe, and then in here in his version he changed it to holly and mistletoe.
Oh, that's right. I do remember reading that. Yeah, of course. Oh, Mr. You know, I
think... some people don't like that, but you had to believe that he wasn't going to.
He wasn't going to say that. He wasn't for a guy who's been a vegetarian for, you know, nearly 50 years.
Exactly. Yeah. So so you've heard that version. How do you like it?
I like it. I think I got it as part of one of the deluxe versions of Kisses on the Bottom. I thought he did fine justice to that song.
Right.
Kind of just like I said, tapping into the Kisses on the Bottom feel. Which, side note, that album was recorded so well, and just a great sound on that record, from start to finish. And, you know, it's off the charts good. I enjoy that record as a covers album. A lot of album that draws a lot of ire from a lot of fans. I personally like it a lot. I don't listen to it every day, but I do enjoy it. You know. And the Christmas song, I think he did a fine job with that song as well.
Right. Cool. Absolutely. So, and I do believe that song was issued as a single. I'm pretty sure it was back in, I think, when Kisses on the Bottom
stuff.
Released. So later that year or during the Christmas time, I think it was released as a single.
Yeah.
So.
Say, pop question. Outside of McCartney, what are your, say, 3 to 5 top Christmas songs or albums by artists?
I love the, you know, Rocking Around the Christmas Tree, Have a Happy Holiday song. I don't know exactly what that song is officially called, but that's always been one of my favorite. I love Burl Ives doing Frosty the Snowman. I enjoy that very much. What's his name? You mentioned his name earlier. Andy Williams.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a fan of the, you know, his songs that he does. And then there's Herb Albert, who put out a Christmas album, which is pretty good. And but yeah, those are usually my standouts right there. You know, the Carpenters, you know, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which is excellent. The John Denver and Muppets album.
That was a staple in my house growing up, that album. Right. That was a staple of my childhood. That's a great one.
Exactly. So, you know, my wife, collects Christmas albums from all over the world. So we have, you know, a few international Christmas albums. So that we will put on one from time to time just to get the feel of, of a Christmas from a different country.
Very
you know,
nice.
Which, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's I try not to go too crazy. If I'm in the car, maybe I'll listen, you know, once or twice a week. I won't listen to Christmas songs every time I'm in the car.
Right.
But, you know, definitely, you know, probably come the 20th is when I'll really start, you know, getting into listening to.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah. Well, how about you? I mean, what are your standouts?
For albums, for me, outside of the Beatles and McCartney and Lennon, Phil Spector's Christmas album, A Christmas Gift to You, 1963, is the benchmark standard for me. I absolutely love that record. Bobby B. Sox, Darlene Love, awesome album, wonderful production. That's a great one. I also enjoyed the Beach Boys Christmas album.
Little Saint Nick.
Oh my God! The Man with All the Toys, Brian Wilson. And their harmonies. The list is endless. But those are like two top ones. And I kind of like some of the newer age stuff. I do like the Mannheim Steamroller, kind of proggy rock, TSO. their take on traditional music. I enjoy that quite a bit because it's just a change, you know, to listen to it. Individual songs, Greg Lake's I Believe in Father Christmas. I love that song. I think that's a tremendous one, too. So they're just a couple of my favorites. And I'm like you. I could listen to it, a healthy dose of it here and there. I won't get headlong into it until about a week or so before Christmas. But, you know, I kind of just – it's funny. I'm a school teacher, and I have the Christmas music playing on a loop in my classroom, you know, all day. And they're like, Mr. Nichols, you know, we've heard this song already, or this is old. Oh, we're hearing that wonderful Christmas time again? Yes, we are. Again and again and again.
Yeah, I'll also, you know, every year since this came out, I'll try to get one or two of these on, you know, preferably the earlier ones because they're just more comical, I think, and more, you know, Beatly, you know, than anything.
Oh, come on, you don't like those like ones from 1968 or 69 or.
Yeah, as the years went by, they just got weirder and weirder.
I know. I tell you what, though, my favorite one in that whole set is that 1966 one, the pantomime.
Yeah.
Everywhere's okay. Christmas. I enjoy that kind of. You know, the first couple ones are nice because they're very just straight and to the point. You know, 66 is where it starts to get a little weird. You know, they start doing those little vignettes and, you know, Pudgy and Jasper and all that stuff. And but there's nice little individual. You know, vignettes of music within those records that McCartney does, you know, like I think it's like in the 68 or 69 one, he's got that, you know, he does that little Happy Christmas jingle in it, which is like 40 seconds, right? But you're like, oh, that could have been a great Christmas song, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, I think it was a Happy Christmas to everybody in 1968/9. Right, yeah, so I even those records, even towards the end, contain little seconds of just awesome spontaneity that could have been fully fleshed out, but, you know, by 68, 69, they were mailing it in, but that was a nice set as well, too, and I don't think, if that ever gets any airplay, you know, around my family around the holiday time, once we get to 1968, they're like, all right, Andy, let's turn that off.
Do you, I mean, I'm sure they play, you know, yet to listen to the Beatles channel on Sirius XM. I really don't feel like I need to because I have everything, you know. But, I mean, is that something – I mean, do you listen to it? Is it something that you've heard?
I listen to the channel a fair amount because, again, we have everything. But they do play the Christmas records around that Christmas time. Usually about the week of Christmas and certainly on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. They'll just rotate the album, you know, the Christmas records and stuff like that. The Beatles, as a side note, I think the Sirius channel is great because of the talk shows that they have on it, not necessarily the music, which is kind of just a iPod on or whatever on random or shuffle, but the talk shows that they do a few times a week with Dennis Elsis and a few other guys, Tom Frangione, they're really those. That's why I enjoy the channel is for that, because they're doing stuff like that we're doing. So. But you should check it out. You know, I don't listen to it 24/7 because outside of the shows, like I know every day, Chris Carter does Breakfast with the Beatles and he does a great job kind of updating the news like we do. And as a theme to his show every day. So like around Christmas time, he'll do the same kind of thing. But once the hosts are off the air, it is very, very formula. Like it could be just stuff you hear all the time and that gets a little bit dull.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay, cool.
So,
well, all right. So anything else you want to add to all these songs?
No, just the Christmas time is here again. Ain't
been
around.
Yeah, sure is.
Ain't been around since you know when.
Right.
But that's it. Yeah, another quick episode of Two Legs. Happy to jump on here and talk about our favorite Christmas song or one of them. So.
Absolutely. So, but, you know, we'd love to hear your thoughts about these songs, you know, specifically, you know, Wonderful Christmas Time. Are you one of those people that hate it? Are you one of those people that love it? I mean, where does it belong in McCartney's canon of songs? Is this something you look forward to hearing every year? You know, you can email us your thoughts at twolegspodcast@gmail.com, or you can go to our Facebook page, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, and send us a message. Tell us what you think of these songs. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Legs Podcast. And we just love to hear from you guys. We thank you very much for tuning in. You know, since Andy's been here, the show's been taking off, and you know, we've heard from a lot of you, and we really appreciate you guys taking the time and reaching out to us. And yes. You know, Keep sending those comments our way. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your support, everybody out there. The comments that we get, the emails. It's really encouraging to see that there's like-minded fans out there that share our thoughts and disagree with ours too, and that's all fun too.
Absolutely. If you do disagree with anything we say, we'd be more than happy to hear your side of the case. You know, send us your argument, and we'll reply back and tell you why you're wrong or why we disagree with you,
or why we strongly disagree. Not that you're wrong. We strongly disagree.
Everybody is right in a way, because after all, these are just opinions, right? And everybody has one. So, but it's a lot of fun doing the show with you. We look forward to doing more shows. I know we've got plenty of people booked for future shows. So looking forward to bringing a lot more guests, people that had books out already, or people that are having books coming out, and hopefully eventually we'll get some musicians that have actually worked with Paul on the show. So that'll be a lot of fun. So hopefully that's going to be the case in the future. So, but Andy, anything else you?
That's it, man. Two Legs is rolling on to 2020.
It sure is. So, yeah. Everybody, thank you once again. And as always, have a great day and a beautiful night.
And have a wonderful Christmas time.
There you go.
Listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan.